Hey there, everybody. Welcome to the Only Podcast. I'm Chris Vanini, your co-host today, tonight, whenever you're listening to this. I'm joined by KJ, Kyle, Jen, and Joe Tui. I forgot how to say your name, last name again. How you guys doing?
Doing well. You got it right.
Tui. Okay, so it's like longest. It's like what's that movie called? Blindside, right?
Yeah, exactly. Just spelled a little different, but yeah.
KJ, you're Kyle Jen. That's pretty simple, right?
It's pretty simple.
So, been an interesting week of Michigan State sports since Joe and I last got together. Only one basketball game, an easy blowout of Arkansas Pine Bluff, and the bowl games came out. Michigan State, as expected, did not make the college football playoff. They were surprisingly jumped by Mississippi State in the standings, despite neither team playing. And as a result, the Spartans are going to the Cotton Bowl against Baylor instead of the Orange Bowl against Georgia Tech, which is where everybody had penciled them in and where all the reporters had already booked their flights to. So, before we talk into the game, that whole idea of Mississippi State jumping Michigan State, the committee said it was just a result of looking at a blank slate each week. There really was no new data to switch these teams. You could say Mississippi State lost to Alabama, who won the SEC. Well, Michigan State lost to Ohio State and Oregon, who both won their conference championship games. So it was an odd decision, not to go all conspiracy, but I seriously wonder if that was done so the Big Ten got its Citrus Bowl spot and therefore Illinois would make a bowl game and all the Big Ten teams are bowl eligible. What were your thoughts on how the pairings kind of came out and how that was set up on Sunday?
Yeah, I mean, it's hard to argue with the – you can argue it either way. I think probably intuitively people looked at this, you know, looked at the previous rankings and said, well, it seems like there ought to be a second SEC team a little closer to the top. You know, Mississippi State, you know, had a couple better wins than we did. The records are the same. Nobody really knows how good MSU is, including us, because like we've talked about ad nauseum now for the last couple weeks, we've – lost to a couple really, really good teams by decent margins, two teams that are both going to be playing in the four-team playoff, and we beat, you know, Nebraska close. So, you know, it's hard to get in too big a yank over that other than just kind of the principle of why did we do these weekly rankings if they were going to move teams around based on not a lot of evidence, but in terms of the rankings themselves, I don't have a huge problem with it, and it seems like it's a win-win for MSU and the Big Ten.
I think, had Mississippi State been ahead of Michigan State prior to, I would have been equally confused if the Spartans jumped them. It was more the idea of teams changing in the rankings without any tangible data being added to the equation. I think a lot of focus was on Ohio State jumping Baylor and TCU and getting into the playoff and how that 4-5-6 played out. But I think equally confusing was how Michigan State and Mississippi State flipped. Joe, did you have any thoughts on how that played out?
Yeah, I mean, I'm pretty happy, really, with how all of that played out. I thought that even apart from the Cotton Bowl, which to me seemed like the ideal scenario, playing, you know, the best team outside of the playoff, according to the playoff committee, Baylor is at number 5, is great, and I think it's a much more interesting matchup than Georgia Tech, even though they don't play necessarily that interesting, you know, flexbone style that Georgia Tech plays. So I was happy with that. I thought that all of the matchups look really good. I'm excited to watch all of them. Georgia Tech and Mississippi State in the Orange Bowl. Our game against Baylor. I think the Fiesta Bowl could even be pretty entertaining with Arizona and Boise State. And also, Ole Miss and TCU in the Peach Bowl. So I was happy with how all of that broke down. I'm happy for the Big Ten because, you know, there's more money coming into the pot with all of the teams being in bowl games. I don't think that we could have really asked for anything better.
I have to point out that you did get your wish last week when we talked about I made you choose between Orange Bowl, Georgia Tech, or Citrus Bowl, SEC, and you wanted to choose other bowl against other opponents. But you got that, so congratulations.
Thanks. Sometimes you got to answer the tough questions anyways, but, you know, I did what I could.
That's what we do here. Yeah, so Cotton Bowl at AT&T Stadium. The Cotton Bowl is not played at the Cotton Bowl. It's not played in Dallas. It's played in Arlington in that billion-dollar stadium, which MSU has not played in yet. Baylor played there a couple weeks ago, actually, I think, against Texas Tech.
But it's a good thing we're protecting the bowl system because there's all that tradition, and you don't want to trample on that, you know.
Absolutely. So as Joe mentioned, you get the top non-playoff team. In terms of bowl prestige, matchup prestige, KJ, how do you think this shapes up?
Yeah, I mean, I think bottom line, like Joe said, you're playing the best team outside the playoff, a team that, you know, a lot of people would have thought deserved to be in the playoff. Beating a Big 12 team is gonna bring a little more prestige than beating an ACC team. You know, it's a chance for MSU to prove that the defense can restore some of its pride after getting burned pretty bad by both Oregon and Ohio State. So it's hard to really, you know, outside of making the playoff, which we kind of knew wasn't going to happen after the Ohio State loss, it's pretty tough to beat this scenario. I think we're the early game New Year's Day, right? So we lead into the two playoff games.
Yeah, 12:30 Eastern, I believe, is the kickoff.
Yeah, that's right. And it's also going to be interesting because that'll be 11:30 Central Time, which is where Arlington is. So anyone going to the game, and I think I'm going to make the trip down, is maybe going to be a little hungover that morning. But you know, not that anyone would consume alcoholic beverages at any point. But
I'd probably just start late the night before. I'd take a nap, start late, just plow through all the way through, Joe.
Spartans will.
Spartans will.
So in terms of a matchup, I do not think this is a very good matchup for MSU at all. I didn't think Georgia Tech was a good matchup either, but in two games against two high-profile spread opponents, the defense got taken to town quite a bit. Joe and I talked last week. I don't think this defense has really improved much as the season has gone on, and they recently added Tony Lippitt as a cornerback for that reason, but Lippitt hasn't gone up against a receiver the caliber of anything Baylor has. I think it's going to be a really high-scoring game, obviously. The focus on the matchup is Baylor's offense and Michigan State's defense nationally. But MSU's still getting a good reputation nationally for its defense, despite that defense not playing all that well in the important games, the stats against all the lower quality opponents. KJ, in terms of matchups, do you think this is favorable, unfavorable for MSU?
Yeah, I don't know. When everyone thought we were a lock to play Georgia Tech, people were complaining about the matchup. That worried me a little less. I mean, it's a different scheme, but you've got time to prepare for the scheme. I think if you're going to point to a strength for MSU, you know, it's still the defensive line. And if you can get good defensive line play, that would have disrupted an option team a lot more than, you know, a spread team where it's going to be a lot of quick passes and potentially taking advantage of those slot routes that we got burned on, not just against really Oregon or Ohio State, but Purdue, you know, also attack that weakness. So I would agree. I don't think it's a great matchup on paper, but you know, at the same time, playing anybody who's, you know, in the top five or six teams in the country isn't going to be a great matchup. So if you want the opportunity, you kind of have to take it.
Joe, what do you think?
I mean, it's really interesting, right? Because I think it's sort of an opportunity for redemption in the sense that the two teams with elite offenses that MSU has played thus far kind of shredded those particular weaknesses. So I'll be really interested to see what the corner rotation looks like, because it seemed like the coaching staff wanted to really make sure that Lippitt wasn't getting too burnt out on the defensive side, and so they were rotating Hicks and Cox in there as well. And so it'll be interesting to see exactly what that rotation looks like, or if there are any other further modifications. Maybe Mylon Hicks plays a little bit more than he did now that he's back from injury and has had a little bit of time to recover at playing at star. It'll be fascinating, but I'm a little more confident. There's been more time. They've had a little film to study to figure out how to deal with some of those issues. And like KJ said, it's not going to be ideal in any world. But also think about the fact that they haven't really played many teams that play great defense in the Big 12. I mean, those Big 12 games are all very high scoring, and so it'll be really interesting to see how that offense measures up against a defense that was pretty good, at least in games that weren't at a super high profile. So
you have to look at the fact that Baylor, in its best win this year against TCU, gave up 58 points. So there's going to be some opportunities for MSU to score too, presumably.
Right. I just think with the defensive back struggles that they, because against a team that consistently goes 4-5 wide like this, I don't know if MSU is going to get out of its base 4-3. That was a big problem in 2009. The defense was its worst. That they played a lot of teams, Central Michigan, Notre Dame, that spread them out, and then they'd have linebackers covering the slots, and that puts even more pressure on the safeties, whom have struggled quite a bit this year. I'm curious to see what Narduzzi comes up for and if he tries to go more nickel-dime, especially since the linebackers themselves haven't been very good this year. In terms of preliminary, we're going to go a preliminary score prediction. We can give a more official one as we get closer, but how you don't even have a good score prediction, but maybe a score difference in kind of a general range. KJ, what are you thinking?
Well, of course, I've taken a lifelong vow of not making score predictions. Oh, but I will say, I think the opening line was, what, Baylor by 2.5 or something like that?
Something like that. I think an over-under of 70, which actually that was kind of low. But
yeah, if I had to put money down right now, I think I'd bet on Baylor at the moment at least.
Yeah, I think I would say, the line I think opened at 1.5 towards Baylor's side. I think it's up to 3. That over-under, I think the real bet is just over on the over-under. If you're a betting man. But, I mean, Baylor by 3, that sounds about right. That's hard to argue at this juncture. I don't know. Other than the over, it's kind of hard to make a prediction at this point.
And I suppose if you're going to take the rule of thumb on picking bowl games is who's most motivated, really flip either way. You know, Baylor's arguably dejected from not making the playoff. Do they care about this game? MSU's on a letdown from a Rose Bowl season a year ago. I suppose you could argue it either way. You know, it would be an easy storyline if one team, you know, wins by 14 points or more than that, maybe to argue. You know, you could see it happening with both teams having high-powered offenses. So, who knows?
Yeah, it's a little disappointing to me from the MSU fan base that I've experienced, at least. Like, I feel like we should be more excited about this Cotton Bowl. I mean, pre-last year, pre-2013, this team hadn't made a BCS game. The biggest bowl game that they'd been to was the Capital One Bowl a couple times, where we lost to SEC teams. Like, I don't know, it just feels like we need to, you know, get a little more going for this game, right? It seems it's a major game. We're playing the number 5 team in the country. Like, I'd like to see a little more juice, but
I think we kind of talked about this last week. There hasn't been much for this team to hang its hat on. I mean, it's pretty much quality losses. I mean, you have the win against Nebraska, which is okay, but Nebraska doesn't even have has a new coach now. They fired their coach, so there's nothing that MSU there hasn't been like any memorable moments this year. There hasn't been a rocket Hail Mary, a fake field goal, a negative 48 rushing yards against a Michigan team. Nothing to, like, really hang their hat on other than wins that they should have had and losses that they should have had. It's kind of been everything that's happened this year has pretty much been according to plan or was expected. In terms of scores, I'm thinking Baylor by 7-10, but I think they'll hit the over. I think these teams are going to score a whole heck of a lot of points, and it's going to be a lot of fun. The key will be MSU making Baylor go down the field in 6-7 plays and not two plays. So, but you got a month to prepare. It'll be interesting to see what MSU does. It'll be interesting to see how MSU travels. They haven't gone down there since the Alamo Bowl in 2009. When that was all Texas Tech fans. That's another thing. I think Baylor fans will show up for this game because a BCS-type game, they made one last year, but it's still, and there's still a lot of excitement. They built a brand-new stadium. A lot of excitement around that program. I think MSU will be in a pretty decent road environment for another, and I think that could also affect Baylor's energy in terms of their motivation. But moving on to basketball now. Like we said, we only had the one game against Arkansas Pine Bluff that was a blowout. I continue to keep track of floor slap stats. In that game, MSU slapped the floor twice, resulted in a bucket and a foul with two free throws made. So I've been saving these up for the year. They're not doing too well. There was a game against Loyola where they slapped the floor five times. That's kind of padding their stats a bit. But KJ...
I have a theory on that. It's like being on the Sports Illustrated cover, because the floor slap always comes when you're in the middle of a run, or you've made a run on, usually you've
outscored not this the year. Opponent.
Well, maybe not this year so much. Long term...
It's a very slap happy, and... Forbes, it looks like, kind of every time he scores, reaches down to touch his shoes, so I always have to pay attention to that and make sure it's not a slap. Nairn has done quite a few slaps on his own that the team has not followed, but it's a team game, so the whole team will be held accountable for any one slap, as I've put it. So it reflects on the whole team.
I think we need a scatter plot with the number of MSU players who slap the floor on one axis and then efficiency on the other.
Speaking of that, KJ, you had a pretty good scatter plot regarding the usage and efficiency of the MSU team. What when you're looking at where this team's at, just your general thoughts.
Yeah, I mean, offensively, you look at the aggregate numbers, and it's pretty good. We're 18th in the country in adjusted offensive efficiency. It's not off the charts, but for a team that's rebuilding a little bit, Valentine, Trice, Costello, Schilling, Forbes all have offensive rating numbers over 110. I think looking at that scatter plot, the couple of takeaways are, A, Bryn Forbes needs a few more shots, given that his efficiency is off the chart at 134, and that was, of course, the big complaint in the loss to Notre Dame, is that he'd hit all seven of his shots and then didn't really get any opportunities down the stretch. And then I think Dawson's still the wild card. His offensive rating's only at 106, mainly because he's hitting exactly half of his attempts from two-point range, and that should be a little higher considering a lot of those are putbacks. He's missed a lot of his mid-range shots, and those are shots he was hitting in the NCAA tournament at the end of last season, and that hopefully he finds the range again on as he had the flu for a bit there during the stretch where he played three games in 4 days in Orlando, so that may have skewed the numbers a little bit. But those are your two big opportunities to boost the efficiency, at least on the offensive end. And then I'm kind of not quite as high on Tum Tum as I think some observers are. That's probably a little bit because I'm overly obsessed with the numbers, but he's made 5 of 16 shots from the field in 9 games. His assist rate's great, but he's also turning the ball over at a pretty good clip for a point guard. So I just think he gets lost as soon as he's in the middle of the lane, and maybe he adjusts to that as we go along, but hopefully as Forbes comes back to 100%, then, you know, by the end of the month, we're supposed to get Best back. That alleviates a little bit of the need so that Izzo can pick his spots with Nairn and go with the hot hand a little more on the outside.
Yeah, I think Trice has been an incredible improvement. I think his assists to turnovers, he's been shooting the ball pretty well, other than that Notre Dame game when he was kind of sick. While Valentine has been more of a turnover machine than I would have expected. He's hitting from outside pretty well, better than I think a lot of us expected, but he's still making a lot of bad passes and turnovers that are a lot of his turnovers are turning into touchdowns the other way, as they say. Joe, what after that Arkansas Pine Bluff game, thoughts on where the team's at?
So I think one of the things is that it's very difficult for players to both increase their usage and increase their efficiency year to year, you know, year over year. And Trice has done that, which is unbelievable. And Valentine has not, right? I mean, he's using more possessions than he was. Actually, he has two. I take it back. I'm just looking this up right now. Valentine has also increased his usage rate from 18% to nearly 24%, and has increased his efficiency as well. Most of that's coming from shooting the ball better, and not from he is turning the ball over at a higher clip, but he's shooting 48% from deep, which is really impressive. So it's on the offensive end, it's really hard to complain too much outside of turnovers, right? Even against Arkansas Pine Bluff, the team turned the ball over 25% of the time, which is too high. I mean, it seems like, and that seems like the trade-off that they're making right now. They're going to turn the ball over at a higher clip than you'd like them to, but because they're whipping the ball around the court, they're going to end up with open shots. So the one thing I'd like to see is just more consistency, but that's going to be difficult for a jump shooting team. And on the defensive end, it looks like there just needs to be more experience, probably with rotations, with Forbes and Tum Tum and Marvin Clark all playing big minutes, and then trying to sort of rotate Ellis back in. Ellis seems like he's had some very good defensive play early. As well, so it'll be interesting to see how that works out with him getting a little more run and Best coming back. I don't know. I don't feel really any different than I did after the Notre Dame game. I think the Big Ten is starting to look, starting to take shape a little bit, at least. Maybe not as good as in previous years, so even if this team isn't as good, maybe as it has been in previous years, it might end up being better in the Big Ten season, especially as these first-year guys come along and guys adjust their roles.
And the basketball team's off for a little bit, and they've got Eastern Michigan coming up soon, who is fresh off a win at Chrysler Arena, surprisingly. We talked about when was the NJIT game? No, yeah, so they've lost to NJIT and Eastern since we last had this podcast. They're looking a lot worse than I expected. They even beat Syracuse. They beat Syracuse recently, but they struggled against Detroit, and I just haven't seen much from that team. You're talking about the Big Ten. But Eastern Michigan now is set to probably be MSU's second-best non-conference win if they were to get that win. Doesn't look like they're going to get that top 100 win. But Eastern, I think they're 8-1. They're not a bad team, so...
They look awful on offense. That was the weird thing about watching. I only saw the second half of that game, but the lack of discipline on offense from that team, from Eastern's perspective, yeah. I mean, they played great on defense, obviously. But
yeah,
they got some bank shots to go in, and they were hitting long jumpers, and they turned the ball over on 28% of their possessions, so they weren't too great either. So it's hard for me to see MSU losing to them just because between the way their offense looks and the fact that I think if MSU's built to do anything, it's built to beat a zone defense with its passing and its shooting. So I hope those words don't come back to haunt me, but
Well, yeah. I would say Eastern has a really non-traditional zone, though. I mean, they don't play really... I wouldn't call what they play a 2-3. I wouldn't call it a 1-3-1. I mean, what they do, it seems to me, is that it's like an umbrella. They've got one guy down low, and they've got four dudes on the perimeter. To me, that seems like a great opportunity for Dawson to have a big game. But in terms of shooting, I think that's sort of how Eastern was able to defend the perimeter well against Michigan, is because they have sort of this non-traditional zone, and Michigan had no ability to post up down low, which seemed to be the issue. I actually, weirdly enough, watched some of the Eastern-Dayton game over the weekend, which was a surprisingly competitive game, and kind of fun to watch because Dayton's home crowd is pretty intense. And they looked a lot better offensively. Eastern looked a lot better offensively. So I'm actually really interested for that game because I think it'll tell us a lot about how good Eastern is, how good MSU is, and how good U of M is, just by having those two games between those three teams.
Yeah. So we can fully expect Izzo to pull out some zone for that first matchup against Michigan, that's for sure, because it seemed to work against Michigan. But we're gonna finish this podcast up with some brief thoughts on football coaching searches, because right before we decided to record this, Gary Anderson of Wisconsin is suddenly off to Oregon State out of nowhere. So that leaves Michigan and Wisconsin both with open jobs, both of them hashtag real rivals for MSU.
No. Michigan is not a real rival. That's the whole point.
Although MSU never did get to play against Gary Anderson in his 2 years there as the Big Ten tries to destroy the border battle. But thoughts on just kind of each job, and my money would be on Wisconsin actually finding a coach before Michigan. Michigan seems to be taking their sweet time, make sure they get this one right. They've got some inexperienced administrators running this thing. They may or may not be waiting for Jim Harbaugh. Meanwhile, Barry Alvarez, I expect to quickly get into position to make a good hire. When he brought in Anderson 2 years ago, it kind of came out of nowhere because Anderson had just signed an extension at Utah State where he was at. So that was a good hire. I think he'll get another good hire, but I think you're going to get a lot of coaches looking at that job and saying, wait, now why have you lost two coaches in a span of 2-3 years, especially to places like Arkansas and Oregon State, which I think most people would label as worse jobs to Wisconsin. But you look at the assistant salaries that Wisconsin has, I think they're ninth in the Big Ten. That was a big problem for Bielema. They've got they're going on more than 20 years of top success here, but they lose another coach to a lesser program. Michigan, meanwhile, hasn't won a Big Ten in 10 years and is trying to get back to the very top. And they'd love to be in Wisconsin's position right now, certainly with all those Big Ten championships and 9-win seasons. KJ, your thoughts on just kind of each one and kind of how it relates to MSU?
Yeah, in terms of Michigan, it still looks like Harbaugh or bust. I mean, you're not seeing a lot of names past Harbaugh that scare you a lot. There's kind of conflicting reports on whether A, Dan Mullen would want the job, and B, whether or not they'd go after him, partly because of the old spread thing. I gotta believe the smart move is to, unless they've really got a great under the radar candidate, I gotta believe they gotta give Harbaugh just about as much time as he wants. I mean, obviously, it can't extend into the NFL playoffs, although it doesn't look like the 49ers are going to make the playoffs, but it seems like they got to shoot the moon there. The Wisconsin one, it's bizarre. I mean, it doesn't really speak too well of the conference that at this point, you've got Urban Meyer, you've got Mark D'Antonio as the two clear top coaches in the conference, and then it's kind of, you got some guys who were hot but have faded. I think you got three top programs all replacing their coaches at the same time, and I'm not sure if this, if I'm reading too much into it, but it doesn't feel like the conference is in a real point of strength in terms of the outlook for the next 5 years past maybe Ohio State and Michigan State.
Joe, what do you think?
Yeah, I would agree with that. I think that these two hires coming up are really important for the Big Ten. One interesting thing is, I think, let's say the Wisconsin job opened for some other reason than Gary Anderson leaving for Oregon State, and Mike Riley was still at Oregon State. I think if Wisconsin had offered Mike Riley the Wisconsin job, do you think he would have taken it? I think he would have, which makes it sort of a funny, you know, situation. They could have probably just traded coaches, but
right.
Maybe we can get the three go around if Bo Pelini gets hired at Wisconsin, which would be pretty funny.
You know what? I honestly think Pelini would. I don't think it's gonna happen. But I think Pelini would be a pretty good fit there, which would complete that whole circle, and it would be kind of weird for Wisconsin to hire a coach who they kicked the crap out of in recent years, but. In terms of styles and fits, I think Pelini would be a good hire. I doubt that's going to happen, but just my thoughts on that.
Yeah, and the other thing I'd like to point out is that we're at peak Schadenfreude with Michigan right now. I mean, between football and basketball, like, this week is just like, I mean, KJ, how are you dealing with this week? Like, is it just like celebrations every day in the Jen household, or?
I woke up this morning on the couch in the living room, and I didn't know quite what had happened. I think I just passed out because, you know, the way it just flooded in after they lost to Eastern last night, after we've spent all this time trolling their search for a football coach. I don't think I could handle it mentally or emotionally.
So, yeah, that'll probably do it from us here. We decided to keep this one shorter on YouTube. Because Jim's not available to upload the audio. Thanks for having to listen, everybody. For Joe and KJ, this is Chris Vanini, and we will talk to you guys later. See ya.
See ya.
Bye.